listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Tennis.com podcast. Wanted to get this one out and going as soon as possible. This is the first week of March, first full week, I should say, and things really do pick up pretty quickly. There's of course Indian Wells gets going this week, Steve. We're going to cover that ground on the site with some men's and women's previews. There's also an event at Madison Square Garden. Serena Wozniacki, Wawrinka, Monfils. So I thought it was good to touch on Davis Cup here. You know, there is a lot of ground to cover, as is the case with the first round of play. And I thought overall this first round was pretty interesting, and it really leads to, I think, some more tantalizing possibilities. I think this is a pretty good addition to the tournament. I think, especially when you compare it to last year, and I think really for the most part we kind of, you know, didn't see the varsity level of Davis Cup. Not to take away from Britain or Belgium, but I think this is a little more representative of what we, you know, come to expect with the tournament.
Yeah, I think even better, really, because you have the number one and two players involved in five set matches and close ties. That's really what you want. You know, that's what people talk about that Davis Cup doesn't get is the top players. But here you had this weekend, you had Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic both pretty much rescuing their teams in five set matches on Sunday. And you sort of starts to make me, you know, they'll also play in the next round, which is kind of unfortunate for Davis Cup. Serbia will play Great Britain. So if they're both playing, they'll meet in that round. But it also sort of feels a little like the top players, the best players, are playing more now. You know, you had six of the top 10, you had the top two. Granted, Federer and Nadal, Wawrinka, they weren't there, but most other big names you saw in this first round. I think it was a pretty good quality event and bodes well for this season.
Yeah, and as you said about Murray and Djokovic, you know, in this case, it was less about the hired gun that comes in to kind of just restore order against a tricky but not overwhelming opponent in Britain played Japan, Serbia played Kazakhstan. As you said, Murray and Djokovic were heavily tested this round. Djokovic, who was coming off of a week where he withdrew because of eye problems, he ends up playing three matches. The first one rolls through that 1-2 and 3. Drops the doubles with Zemanjic and wins a must-win fourth rubber in five sets, taking the last two against Mikhail Kukushkin, who's, you know, if you've watched slams over really the past couple of years and even some, you know, tour events, you definitely know that the guy has, he's not there for no reason. He's certainly on the right day. Is a troubling player against. And, you know, with the first two sets going to breakers and Djokovic dropping the third, you really, you know, kind of wonder where that goes. He does rescue the home team in the end there. You know, maybe we'll just start with that, with Djokovic's performance as a whole. It's still encouraging to see, and, he doesn't give anything away.
Yeah, you know, he ended up winning his two singles, did take a loss in doubles. Maybe you wonder whether he's going to keep playing Davis Cup, if it's going to be this involved for him. You know, we'll see if that has any effect on him in Indian Wells. I would doubt it, but it's good to see him back in Davis Cup since they won in 2010. He's been kind of off and on, but good to see him there this weekend and really helping them. I think Murray is more of an interesting case to me in that they won the Davis Cup last year, and you sort of thought, well, he's not going to play this year. That's pretty much the standard.
He's done his duty, right.
Djokovic, Federer, Nadal to a certain extent. Once they won and had felt like they'd done what they needed to do, it's not like they played every round. But Murray sounds enthusiastic to keep playing. He seems like he really likes the atmosphere, and you know, it's, you know, a home tie like this where he won three matches again. He's up to 14 straight since the beginning of last year in Davis Cup. It almost feels like, you know, he's a top guy who will continue to play Davis Cup. You know, we'll see what happens. But as of now, he's the first guy I felt like top guy who's won and then decided he really liked it and kept going with it. And he, you know, showed again beating Nishikori down a break in the fifth set. It looked like Kay was going to run away with that, but Murray pulled that out. We'll see if, you know, what that does for him also going forward. It was a great way to get back into playing after a month away for him.
Yeah, and you know, really, even when you think about Britain, you know, Murray winning gold for Britain in the 2012 Olympics, he's really done a lot in respect to playing for the nation, and I just think that's a big part of this. He was certainly needed against Japan. He ends up contributing in some way to all of the points that they earned. Nishikori, you know, that you wonder if Britain, like you said, is kind of lost at sea without him in this tie. But he, you know, like Djokovic, he gets the job done, and you know, they're going to meet in the next round. They will. That, you know, that's really, and I know we'll look ahead a little bit down the road, but you know, boy, you have to really kind of savor that quarterfinal tie. It's in Serbia, so you know, you do suspect that you know, we could be seeing some clay chosen for that. This is actually around the date that is held. It is right after Wimbledon, actually. So it's, you know, it'd be fairly interesting, the kind of the games that the coaches want to play. But you know, you do sense, looking ahead already to that fourth rubber between those two could be really great stuff. And this is also, you know, this makes also their summers all the more busy. You talk about how much Davis Cup, you know, asks of players. This summer in particular for Murray and Djokovic could be very taxing.
Yeah, hopefully they'll still be ready for that. You know, it's possible they could play a Wimbledon final and then play again in Davis Cup in Serbia. You think Serbia has the advantage there. They have Troitski as a second player, whereas Great Britain at the moment has Dan Evans. That's probably, you know, that probably means Murray's going to need to beat, probably means Murray's going to need to beat Djokovic and win in doubles as well. So, you know, that's a big weekend for him.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not 100% ready to say that both of them would still definitely commit to that tie. There's been a long history of players pulling out because of just, you know, the tour schedule is just too busy, and based on how they do at certain events, Wimbledon obviously is what comes to mind there, but. But you do think that, you know, with their play in this first round, you know, they've kind of at least, you know, thought that come the quarterfinal stage, whatever happens will show up there. So that's, you know, certainly something to keep an eye on, you know, down the road. As we move down the bracket, Italy and Argentina, they will meet in the quarterfinals. Italy swept the Swiss 5-0. No Wawrinka, no Federer, as you mentioned. Argentina gets by Poland 3-2. You know, we were just talking before. Maybe at this time, you know, in July, maybe we see Juan Martín Del Potro kind of work his way into that tie. But anything to add to that one before we move on?
No, that's sort of the quarter. You don't know what's going to happen. That tie is going to be in Italy. Almost certainly on clay. We'll see. You know, Fognini wasn't involved in the first round. We'll see if he's back involved. We'll see about Del Potro. You know, those teams in the first round really didn't have any top players involved at all. So you kind of look at that. You know, they'll have to get some people back. They'll have to hope either Great Britain or Serbia in the coming, you know, further on doesn't field the full team. You sort of feel like those guys are that's an underdog round
sure.
Going forward.
Yeah, and that's in direct contrast to the next tie that we'll be talking about. France which had its full arsenal available in Guadeloupe, actually, not even France proper, where it was, you know, where this tie was held against Canada. Canada did not have Raonic, and they didn't have really any resistance to France whatsoever. You had Monfils, Simon, Gasquet, Sanga, and France did not drop a single set in that really just whitewashing of them there. And, you know, when you were looking ahead to this Davis Cup first round last week, you know, the question was kind of thought about, it's really an annual question about, you know, can France really finally break out and just win this tournament? They have always had the depth, they've always had the players that you think can combine, you know, to put it all together, and they always inevitably have some slip up along the way, whether it's early or late in the event, to prevent that from happening. And, you know, it really is kind of like a dream team if you think about it, in that respect at least. But you know, what do you think kind of France overall this year?
Yeah, you know, you look at that team, there's four guys on that team: Sanga, Gasquet, Simon, and Monfils, who are three guys in the top 20. A fourth guy, Monfils, if he's not in the top 20 right now, he belongs there. That's, you know, easily the deepest, best singles group you're going to field. And you sort of look at that and you think, this generation of French guys has to win a Davis Cup. You know, they haven't done it. They've been there. They've been close. They've been in the finals. Previous generations of French teams have won, the Noah generation, then another one before these guys won one. I mean, you just feel like this is one of their best groups, and they really
kind of all in their primes too, still at the moment.
They really all should win one, but I guess what's kept them back was they don't have the top guy. You know, they can be beaten by one good player, or, you know, they reached the final and lost to Switzerland. They lost to, you know, that was losing to Federer, Wawrinka. They lost to Serbia once. That was mainly Djokovic. Last year they lost to Great Britain. That was Murray. Mm-hmm. They lack that. The same way they lack a Grand Slam champion, they lack like a real anchor player. They also, none of those guys are outstanding doubles players, so they do come together and produce some good doubles teams.
It's almost as if they have, you know, trouble settling on one player and have that sort of just, you know, like having two capable quarterbacks or a goalie controversy. It's tough to, and I think that is kind of a detriment when you don't have that pecking order established.
I think this will be tough. This is a tough round for them because they're facing a couple things that have brought them down. The surface in the, you know, this will be in the Czech Republic, so you figure the surface will be fast. They'll have another tough number one player to face in Berdych, and also he's always been good in doubles in Davis Cup. And the Czechs just seem to know how to win these ties. They got a great match, deciding match in the first round out of Lucas Rosal to beat Alexander Zverev to clinch it. So it's, you know, it's kind of the kind of team that could surprise the French again. But that'll be a big tie. And I feel like France, despite that, with its draw, they should be able to make the final and really challenge this year to finally win it.
Yeah, the Czechs are nothing if not battle tested. You know, they've won two titles pretty recently, 2012, 2013. This past week, they go into Germany, you know, take that tie in five, down to the last rubber. Rosal, you know, with a really one-sided 6-2, 6-3, 6-1 win over Zverev. I think a lot of that does go to, really, you know, the spotlight was on Zverev probably like never before, and Rosal has, you know, he's dealt with that before, not just in Davis Cup, but, you know, on the tour level as well. I think that's a totally different ask for, you know, a very young player still. Berdych, that's a great point about, you know, he is someone who has led this group before. This is essentially the same team that did win the title back then. It does kind of line up. You know exactly really what the progression is from that team. It's a good contrast to France, And like you said, that's not an easy tie for them to get through. So I think you know, if they do get through, that certainly says quite a bit about them, and I think where we can project them going forward. You know, the last quarter final that was established was based off of you know, we'll start with the U.S. and Australia, and the United States wins that one on the road 3-1. There's quite a bit to this tie, you know, involving both teams. But I think I wanted to start just really commending the Americans on this, because this is you know, on the road for sure. It's on grass, which U.S. certainly has players capable of, you know, doing. You know, that's not a surface that's going to hurt them, but it's also one where, you know, you're still on the road, and I thought that you know, that team has had some really tough draws in recent years. They've had trouble getting out of the first round with what looks to be a pretty formidable lineup, and to get through this tie with, you know, without that much difficulty, kind of, you know, just playing to their strengths. Isner serve, you know, he takes two of the matches there. You know, Sock doesn't beat Tomic, but you know, he's, you know, certainly a formidable player on grass. And the Bryans, you know, that's, boy, I think that's a tough one to take if the Bryans lose to Leighton Hewitt for all he's done. But they get it done in four, and I think that's, you know, that's a pretty good win for Team USA.
Yeah, from the U.S. side, you really have to like that, because you look back at last year's first round. The U.S. lost to Great Britain. Isner lost two singles matches, lost a really bad one to James Ward. But here he comes back and is really makes himself the anchor of this team, sort of in the Andy Roddick role. He wins the first match, and then he comes out and clinches it. Two you know, pretty good wins over for him on not his favorite surface at all. And the Bryans, you know, getting through, that was the other sort of question. This is probably the first time that I've heard in a long time that I've heard people speculate that maybe the U.S. should have brought another singles player and not brought the Bryans, because, you know, that means taking those two guys and just devoting them to double, because they're not as strong as they were. But and it also even showed in the final. They went five sets with against a team they normally would beat, but they won, and you know, that was also key. So you feel like that was a good one, good win for them, a good win for Jim Courier, and also for Isner to kind of take over this role finally of being a Davis Cup anchor. Of course, on the other side, it was a disaster for Australia last year at this time. While the U.S. was losing, they were winning their first round tie, and it looked like they were, you know, a new Davis Cup generation was coming up for them. But those guys imploded this weekend. Tomic and Kyrgios ended up in a fight over, you know, Tomic said he thought Kyrgios basically was faking to get out of the tie. Kyrgios, you know, shot back at him, and you sort of see Leighton Hewitt, who used to be the bad boy of Aussie tennis, now he's got to be the guy who controls these guys. So it's a rough start for him as the team captain.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, with the Australian Open past us, and now this first round of Davis Cup, you know, of course, all those matches played, you know, on the Australian continent there. And, you know, with a few years past of us seeing Tomic, Kyrgios, Kokkinakis, who didn't play, kind of establish themselves, and I think get that, you know, get the excitement going about really this new young generation of Australian talents. You know, I wonder when we're getting to a point, and I know these guys are still so young, where it's kind of like, you know, how much is too much, kind of just really crap to take and see these guys deal with. It's a matter of, I think a lot of people would say, of these players not learning from, you know, mistakes in the past about, you know, whether it's on court, certainly a lot of off court, as we're talking about. But this, you know, this just does not look good for Australia, really. And it's been a tough, I think, you know, really almost the past, you know, calendar year or so, where we have not seen, and I think we've seen other countries. I think this is why I think some people are really down on the Australians. I think the younger talents in some other countries are quickly, passing them, and you know, they have they really do have a deep group here, but it has been really a struggle to kind of bring this together. And I think to lose this tie on, you know, at a venue like Kooyong, which is so, you know, if you really want to go sort of symbolic here, you know, that's, you know, such a hallmark of the, you know, the old guard of the Australians, to go down kind of meekly to this American crew, just not a good look for Australia, and I think a pretty bad start to the season overall.
Yeah, you kind of wonder, you know, you keep hearing, will Kyrgios and Tomic learn their lessons? Are they growing up? Are they letting, you know, are they maturing? And then sometimes you think yes, and then something happens where you think no, and you really look at Tomic and wonder how long Tomic, who's 22 or older than that, and so, you know, if Kyrgios follows that model, they'll be up and down and have these problems for a long time. You know, it's not as if there's been a lot of progress. There seems to be progress with them at times, and then they take a step back like this weekend. And I think you also compare it. You look, you know, you're mentioning other young players. You can compare it to the other tie down in the bottom of that draw, Croatia versus Belgium, the fifth rubber. The young Croatian born at Chorich, he won his fifth rubber, the decider to clinch that, and Croatia advances into the next round. So you sort of see guys like him and Zverev making progress, and see Tomic and Kyrgios sort of stop and start.
Yeah, I think that's another good tie for the quarterfinal round. I think, just, you know, like I said, I think this is a really strong round. Croatia will, you know, Chorich and Marin Cilic will be, you know, coming to the U.S. for that tie. And I think the U.S. does really well traditionally on home soil. I think, you know, I think that's a tough one to call as well. But I think it's, you know, another example of really a pretty nice way that the bracket has shaken out. You know, I guess if we want to make a dark or really kind of shot in the dark, is, you know, where do you see, I guess, France? You have to think that they will, you know, they'll be encountering some tough competition down here. You have, I guess, at the top, we kind of have to see, you know, what the long-term commitment from, you know, a Murray or a Djokovic is. But you have any kind of, you know, prognostication on where this all ends up down the road?
Well, I was thinking if this might be France's year, you know, judging by their first round and sort of the enthusiasm spirit they had down there with Noah and that whole team together. But that is a tough tie coming up against the Czech Republic. I sort of see the U.S. as a dark horse, because I feel like, well, they'll play Croatia at home, which will be a help. And I think if you're looking at a guy and a team that will be there through the year, I think Isner and the U.S., Isner, Sock, the Bryans, that U.S. team is, I think, is pretty solid. You don't know really whether Murray and Djokovic will continue at the top. So I feel like the U.S. could be a dark horse in there, in that they've gotten off to a good start, and you know, they really, I think, will be committed to it all throughout.
I think a lot of that depends on really where we see the Bryan brothers taking this year in terms of their performance overall. This has been, you mentioned about the Bryans, kind of the opinion of them as it stands now. Last year was not a year that they're used to. And, you know, I think, you know, you could certainly say they're clearly on the back nine of things. They still are really one of the tougher doubles teams to face against in a Davis Cup, especially when it's best of five. So it's a really strong round coming up in July. I did want to close this podcast for sure to pay our respects and mention to Bud Collins, who last week at 86, he passed. Certainly someone that, you know, I can speak for myself, and I'm sure Steve, you know, someone that has always been, you know, such a pleasure to not only to learn about and to read about when I didn't know Bud at all, when I was really just kind of looking to break into this, you know, as a writer, as an editor, But when, you know, I did have the opportunity at some tournaments to just say hello and just, you know, really just introduce myself, try to just even, you know, get a word in, get something, you know, he always came back with, you know, just the utmost just pleasure. It was as if he was as happy to speak to you as I was to talk to him. I've written this before to anybody who has not read his memoir, My Life with the Pros, which came out, I believe, in the late 80s. You know, I don't think that book has aged one bit. It's one of the best tennis history books that I've read, and it's really written in the style that you've come to expect from Bud over all these years. So I just wanted to certainly say give my thoughts on Bud, and you know, I'll maybe hand it off to you, Steve, as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you first from the point of view of a tennis writer, a sports writer, you expect somebody like that who's been around for so long and has such a big name not to be particularly welcoming of new people, or just not to go out of his way to help it. But Bud was always very encouraging. He always, you know, introduced himself. I remember being introduced himself as Bud Collins. I'm Bud Collins, as if you weren't going to know that. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that. He didn't. It wasn't false humility. It wasn't a pretentious or false humility. He really just, that's how he thought of himself. He didn't think of himself as any different than he was before he was well known. I think he always thought of himself as just one of the writers in the press room, like anyone else. He was always there. You know, he was a TV personality, but he spent his time at a desk in the press room like any other reporter, because that's what he was for so long. And I think you're right about My Life with the Pros, his book. I also, you know, when I hear that people talk about how tennis doesn't have a history of great writing, or people will talk about David Foster Wallace as if that's the only great tennis writing, I would say people should read My Life with the Pros, which is an insider's take, but also really well written. You know, you really get the history of the sport through a unique perspective. And also, he was the person who really, the history that we know of tennis was essentially written by him on the American side, on the British side, Richard Evans. But if it wasn't for Bud's sort of witness to all of it, tennis, there would be so much less tennis history just based on one person, which I think is, that shows how much he meant to the sport. You know, it's not often that one person could serve as the real historian of the game. And I think the writing was good. I think he should be considered among, when we talk about great books and great sports writing books, that should be part of the conversation. But unfortunately, it isn't. But maybe now it'll get a little more recognition. His writing and his work will get a little more recognition rather than him as a personality.
Yes. Yeah, very well said. 100% agree with you there. So I think we will leave it at that, on that note, and we'll return next week where Indian Wells will be in full throw. So plenty to talk about at that point, and there is a lot going on this week. Please head to tennis.com for all that. So for Steve Tigner and Ed McGrogan, thank you again for listening to the tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.